Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there.
Get a hold of.
Everybody up there.
Get into it.
Ooh-way.
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show. And online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation. Always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. Thanks for listening today on 980 AM. And if you're joining us via iTunes and podcast, we greatly appreciate it. Or if you're hitting up the website at grillnationshow.com, appreciate you checking that out as well. Hope you're having a great day and a great week, whatever part of the week you're listening to the show. Really appreciate it as always. Want to thank our partners and supporters of the Grill Nation Show as we get started today. We're very important people to the show and to the Kansas City region. Title sponsors of the show are Truss, MoBank, BOK Financial, and Two West Companies and Ryan Rink. Contributors to the Grill Nation Show include the KCADC, thanks to Tim Cowden, Brian Sarr from True Wealth and Company, a guest host and honor contributor, and poor KC, who's joining us this week, John Stevens. Thank you very much for the support of the Grill Nation Show and for joining us from different time to time on the show. I want to welcome in John Stevens, who is the president and CEO at Poor KC. We're going to talk current events, local, state, and federal on today's show and catch up with John. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. Glad to be back.
John is on Twitter at Rockhill Strat. That is his Twitter. He's very active. I actually recommended John in a local magazine story.
Yeah, very nice.
Well, who should you follow? It has to be in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And so I see these things in Kansas City, and I see like some people follow like artists, and you know, yeah, a lot of people are following people in their industries, and I feel like we're pretty aligned in what we care about as far as Kansas City and moving city forward. And so I had to put you on there, man.
Well, thank you, Jason.
I didn't put Patrick Mahomes. I didn't put...
You know, hey, I think Mahomes is getting enough cred out there. He's everywhere. Yeah, you know, it's fun. Twitter is fun. It's a great way to connect with the community. And I view it as an extension of a conversation. It's not... You know, it's no more than a conversation. So you can talk about a lot of things that matter.
We find the things can really explode on there too, right?
They can. Yeah, that's always an interesting one. That's why I try to keep my gift game strong, you know, just so you can always reply with a fun gif and you don't have to worry about it.
And it's funny because we both have worked in communications and in crisis comms and PR, and it's always like, you know, how do you respond? Do you not? And it's funny how people respond to different things on Twitter, but we'll get into that some other time. But
yeah,
you're at Poor KC, you're running the show there. How's it been for you? I know you've been in there for now, what, how long?
About 10 months.
10 months, okay.
So still relatively new, but you know, I'll say, much like Kansas City, there's just a lot of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the number one topic that everyone asks when you hear Poor KC or Port Authority or the river is the flooding. And we certainly have had our fair share of issues because I think we've discussed it before, Jason, but you know, Poor KC really does operate a port terminal in the West Bottoms. We do navigation and transportation on the river. And in addition, we develop the riverfront and do intermodal transportation and do economic development. But at the core is the river. And when we're in flood stage, which after this last rain event over the weekend, we're back up in flood stage on the Missouri, and we had just gotten back down where the Mississippi and St. Louis were ready to open navigation. And we have, I believe, 16 barges ready to unload in Kansas City, which is, you know, something like 28,000 tons
wow.
of goods that are waiting in St. Louis for navigation open back up, which is incredibly rare. Usually things are just humming along, and really the Missouri River is a water highway for a lot of goods. And we have a little bit of a challenge here. I mean, the big question people ask is about flooding on the riverfront, flooding in parks. You know, is it harming the industry right there in front? Well, the nice thing about Berkeley Park is we're way up. We're in the thousand-year floodplain.
That's what people don't quite understand, yeah. Right? They think when they think about building things down there, they see what's happening in Parkville, for instance, in English Landing, right, where I used to live. It was always flooded.
Yeah, and that's an amazing park, but it is designed fundamentally different. It's designed naturally to flood when the water comes up and then to go back down.
So the concerns aren't as strong as far as you guys in future development.
No,
as
no.
Other places. People,
you know,
just assume that because you're on the river.
Yeah, you know, of course, you know, it's the never say never, obviously, but at the same time, what people don't realize is Berkeley Park, the 55 acres down at Berkeley Park, that's actually backfilled up above the levees that were there previously.
Okay.
So that entire park, the Union, Barquet, everything is way above. So what I've liked to say as an analogy when the media and others ask is you say, well, if Berkeley Park is flooded, if the Union and Barquet, if you can't bring your dog to Barquet, that means that all of Fairfax, General Motors, and all of the West Bottoms are underwater. So wow. Probably the least worrisome part mm-hmm. of the economy of flooding would be that. And then, of course, our hearts go out to, you know, everybody in Northwest Missouri and, mm-hmm. and throughout the Midwest, because there's something like 1.1 million acres that is flooded right now in Missouri, in and around Missouri and southern Iowa.
Seems like
Iowa.
Every other
it's
day.
Incredible.
There's a, it's crazy. It's sunny this week.
Yeah, exactly. If anybody knows an anti-rain dance, please go ahead and please be doing it.
How many acres are there to develop where you guys are?
Sure. So that's a great question. So we have a 15-acre park, and we actually run Berkeley Park. We program and run the park, the Town of Kansas Bridge, the pedestrian bridge, and we love that. That's I really think of it as Kansas City's front yard. It's sort of the downtown front yard, and, mm-hmm. and we draw people from all over. But then we have about 55 acres. The Union, 410 apartments at the Union, that's where our headquarters are.
And how many acres was that, roughly?
That was about 6.5.
See, that's what's crazy to me. So, it looks so big, and it's only 6.5 out of the 55.
Yeah, and we're working on another project that'll be about 350 apartments. Mm-hmm. Will be the next project most likely to go up. The total build-out it'll end up being about 6 million square feet of mixed use. And one of the things that we're really looking at now that I'm very conscious of is we want this to be a real community and neighborhood feel, not a master planned kind of corporate looking mm-hmm. area. So really every building that comes is going to be nicer than the next one, which mm-hmm. says a lot because they're already the Union is a great building, but everyone's going to be a little bit better and designed by different architects, done by different developers, different partners from all over the country. And we think that that'll make it a really dynamic, walkable community to connect to the River Market in downtown.
So essentially, how many acres do you have left to develop? Total? If you wanted to develop it all.
Yeah, I mean, we have about 45 plus wow. that we can develop.
For people that don't understand that number, a downtown baseball park would take 12 to 14.
12
from
to 14,
I understand.
Exactly.
So it's crazy to me that it's that much bigger because it doesn't feel like it is, but it is.
Right. Yeah, the current design, and this can shift around, but the current design is really set on the large blocks of downtown. So you think about the Crossroads, those big, long mm-hmm. blocks. There's really about 9 of those in that riverfront. Mm-hmm. So you think about, you put buildings on that, that's a lot. And we're excited that we're working with the city on to get geeky FAR 15, which means we can build high.
Okay,
down there.
Good.
So it'll be really nice to get
we're building
much more
a skyline.
Vertical and density, add some stuff to the skyline. Yeah.
I love it. John Stevens is with us from Port KC's Twitter's at Rockhill Strat. Fascinating. We have about a minute left. John, tell me about this exhibit. I just went on your Twitter, the Nelson that you visited, America.
Oh,
it
yeah.
looks cool.
You know, went down there Sunday. And of course, the Nelson, you know, is just such a gem in Kansas City. And of course, they have this amazing art, putt-putt golf and everything.
I haven't done that. I need to check that
it's
out.
It's amazing. Even in the rain, people were out there. But I'll tell you, 30 Americans, if you get a chance, go see it. It is a special exhibit there. I think it's there for at least a couple more months. But it features African-American artists, and it is really takes you through the struggles of mm-hmm. of African-Americans, the pride of African-Americans, the success of African-Americans, the future of African-Americans, and really ties it into American culture and how we all really think through that. And at the end of the day, these are 30 incredible, incredible world-class artists. So amazing.
Can't wait to see it. John Stevens with us. We'll be right back. After this. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, 980 AM and on iTunes via podcast and at grillnationshow.com. Joined today by guest host and honorary contributor to the Grill Nation Show, the great people over at Port KC. John Stevens is joining me. We like to do a recap show, local, state, and federal issues. John is obviously very involved in a lot of those and has a unique perspective in addition to his work at Port KC. By the way, they're on Twitter at Port of KC. John, we had a mayor's race recently. I don't know if you heard.
I heard a little something about it. So
it's funny, you know, like I was out of town the weekend before and I kept asking me, what do you think is going to happen? Mm-hmm. Everyone said it's going to be a close race.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
Didn't turn out that way.
No, it didn't.
Turned out to be about a 60-40 split, 59-41 for Quinn Lucas over Julie Justice. What were your thoughts about the race and about kind of the outcome?
Well, I would agree with you. I think most everyone thought it would be a close race. Some of the surprises there were, I don't think anyone should be surprised that Mayor-elect Quentin Lucas won. Both of them were great candidates. I would say Quentin ran a masterful campaign. And his messaging, I really think in retrospect, his messaging and how he communicated his message to the public really resonated with a lot of people. That was clear by the turnout. And I think once the Northland came in, and it was a very close number in the Northland, you kind of said, okay, now this is the trend, and you're starting to see kind of how voters are leaning and how voters are perceiving this turnout. But ultimately, I think we're very, very lucky that we have six new council members. They all ran, I think, generally almost, I would say all of them ran good races. They ran issues-based races. And I think ultimately in the mayor's seat, we have two really great people who ran really great issues-based discussions with the city. I think we had I think Quentin would probably agree with me. I think we had 467 debates or something like that.
You know, they tried to limit those. I think the campaigns got together in the general, but it still seemed like there was a lot.
Yeah, and I love
that. But I actually liked that they did that.
I agree. And I love that they were the first two candidates, I think, in Kansas City history that said together, we're not doing these private, ticketed, paid, exclusive debates. These all must be open. They must be on the radio. They must be on television. They must be on the internet. They must be live streamed. That was a really good thing for democracy in local politics.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen mayoral debates on TV as much as they were.
No, they did a great job with that, and I think that showed that they both care deeply about Kansas City.
We've both known both candidates, I think, for quite a while, whether it's in Jeff City as an attorney or if it's as a city council person, and I feel like, you know, I got to be honest with the listeners here, I donated to both candidates in the primary and then some during the general as well. But I would have predicted these two. When Kander got out of the race, I felt these would be our two. And I think most people were pretty happy with that. It's funny. I did an interview and I said, you know, what'll happen is it'll be 60-40 and we'll all be shocked.
Right.
You know,
right.
But nobody could predict that. But I agree with you on Quentin. Obviously had the, he worked really hard. I mean, he was everywhere.
He
obviously is a great speaker and a great orator, and he's able to communicate well with the voters and the issues that matter to them. And also, I would say, when I've talked to him about issues or with people, like affordable housing or, you know, what's going on with the city, he definitely is very engaged.
He's very engaged. Every time I've worked with Quinn, he's not only been engaged, but he's also enthusiastic.
And I'm excited for a young mayor. I'll tell you what. I mean, I like Jolie a lot too. I was fine with either of them, but I feel like it's going to be interesting to see what happens with a 34-year-old mayor in Kansas City. You know, this old guard has kind of ran the city for so long.
Right. And I think we're seeing that a lot. I mean, you look at his law school classmate, Congressperson Davids, right over in the Kansas 3rd. There's really a new generation that is bringing a new way of communicating, a new style, but a lot of the same thoughtful, intelligent. I've used this term before, and I don't think Quentin or anyone should take offense to it. But really, I think this new generation are generally policy wonks, and that's what we need. In city government, we need people that are really willing to roll up their sleeves and dig into the hard nuts and bolts of policy if we're really going to move the city forward.
I like that. John Stevens is with us. So you mentioned new city council people.
Yeah.
Do you have any that you want to talk about that you know personally? Or I know that there's Eric Bunch is pro urban. walkability and biking. And I've met him years ago when we were office sport together.
Exactly. I would say that between the six returning and the six new, how they mesh, how they prioritize, I think it'll be very easy for 12 people to come in with 12 issues, independent issues that they want to tackle first.
Yeah.
And so how they build a coalition and how they build a priority list is going to be really important. I mean, the most hard fought race was Jeff Jolly and Eric Bunch.
Good guy, Jeff Jolly. I've known him for years.
Both of them were great guys. And that's why I think, again, the race was so close, is they were both good people with their heart in the right place. I think at the end of the day, Eric worked incredibly hard in district.
That always is the key, right? Is getting out there, knocking on doors, and having a lot of energy. And people seem to like people that are more outgoing, energetic in campaigns.
Exactly. And, you know, and he stuck to the message. And I think people shouldn't underestimate Councilmember-elect Bunch in thinking that he's only going to prioritize pedestrian and bike walk. He really does believe in development of the community and development of neighborhoods, and I think that's going to be important.
John, one of the things is we've had a great 8 years with Sly James, in my opinion. What do you think his legacy will be as someone who's worked with him and obviously has worked with other mayors? I really thought it was a breath of fresh air after kind of some of the previous administrations, at least one, as far as a branding Kansas City. You know, I always thought I think American Idol was here. Somebody was here in 08 or before Sly was elected, and the visuals of Kansas City on the show or one of those shows was just like a joke. And I'm like, we have got to brand Kansas City better. Yeah. One thing you can't argue with is that Sly has definitely put Kansas City on a national scale.
No, absolutely. I think in a couple different levels. One, Mayor James should go down as one of the great mayors of Kansas City, period. Hard stop.
Yeah.
But secondarily, he was really the right personality, the right type of mayor, the right type of leader at the time. Keep in mind, we were digging ourselves out of a recession, right? We had a major real estate collapse. We have a lot of issues to take on. And Mayor James came in and said, I'm going to just push forward and I am going to run through walls for this city. That was a good message. You know, and I think sometimes people accuse him of bullying or pushing too hard, but people need to think about, especially in that first term, how hard we were fighting to kind of catch up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to do things, to move our city forward, to get unemployment back down, to get jobs, to really sort of gain the momentum that we needed for the success of our citizens. And Mayor James did a great job. I will say that I'll remember for the rest of my life, the dozens of times I've been able to work with him on various projects, and to, you know, to say he was just a developer's mayor or something really undersells the level of success and the level of projects he did, from arts to neighborhoods to community to development as well.
Mm-hmm. That'll be exciting to see how he stays engaged. I'm assuming he's going to step away for a while and enjoy
his
life.
He'll be back. He'll be engaged.
John, we both agree we got to continue moving things forward in Kansas City. What are some things that you'd like to see continue to move with the new mayor, the new city council, and some things that we need to focus on?
Well, you know, I'll say both from my seat in Port KC and just me as a civic person, we have to have honest and open discussions on economic development, incentives, exemptions, this sort of structure around it. A lot of it is education for the public, but then some of it is real meaningful policy discussions about what do we need to do where we don't stop momentum. We don't stop growth, because that also stops jobs and opportunity and salaries. But then we also have to address the affordability issues. And I continue to beat the drum, and I think others should as well, that the affordability issue that Nashville, Austin, Portland, other cities are seeing, and that is definitely beyond our doorstep and headed our way, is not just rental housing affordability. It is your entire lifestyle affordability. Mm-hmm. We spend way too much on personalized transit, particularly people of lower income. They have to spend an outsized amount of their take-home income on individual vehicles because we don't have accessible transit options. We don't have places for them to live that are on transit corridors that get them to and from jobs. Those are all things, healthcare, other issues. We really really need to address as a community. And I think if we just focus on rental housing, and particularly if we just say downtown is the only place, we need to focus on this and we need to change the narrative. That is important because we need diverse communities in every way. But we can't just, if we just focus on that, we're going to miss the boat and we're going to miss out and we're going to fail.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Infrastructure is a big deal, right? Ooh. I mean, if Quentin can get those potholes fixed quicker, people are going to love Quentin.
I think, yes,
Quentin Lucas, because, you know, I see these surveys that the Kansas Cityans are the best drivers. I just saw another one today. There's like 10 of the top 10 cities were best driving, and I'm just like, can you imagine if we were this good now, what we'd be if we had no potholes?
Well, I would say I would say as Kansas Cityans, our reflexes are really good dodging those potholes. I do think transportation and infrastructure, we have to continue to focus on infrastructure. People forget, you know, we're investing 2 point whatever billion in infrastructure and flood control. The historic rains would have been 10 times worse had we not been investing for the last 8 to 10 years in stormwater and flood control. Those things are important, but we can't just focus on infrastructure. You can build all the infrastructure in the world, but then how do you retire the bonds? How do you pay for it? You have to have new development and new people. And we really need to be thinking about thoughtful density for infrastructure.
I like that. John Stevens is with me on today's show. Port KC, their website is, John, give us the website for Port KC.
It is portkc.com.
Check it out. A lot of good information on there. When we come back from the break, John, I want to talk about USDA, a little bit about that issue, get into some state issues as well. What's going on with Hyperloop, Governor Parson, low-income tax credits. Then in our final segment, we will touch on some of the national issues going on with the Democrats and with President Trump. You're listening to The Grill Nation Show on 980 AM. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, 980 AM and on iTunes via podcast direct, grillnationshow.com, where you can find links to all of our old shows and photos of our guests, as well as information about our partners and supporters. We appreciate you going to the website and, as always, connecting with me on Twitter at Jason Grill. John Stevens is with us from Port KC. His Twitter handle is at Rock Hill Strat. A lot of cool stuff happens on that Twitter, John. You got a lot of stuff you're sharing about Kansas City and all the things happening. One of the things I've heard about lately is this USDA.
Yeah.
Moving to Kansas City. People in D.C. weren't happy about it. Employees and
no. There's
it's think, happening though.
You know what? It's like a lot of things. I would say that we can't really engage in the federal discussion at that level because Kansas City had no say in the federal discussion. But when really great, high quality, highly educated professionals are offered up to move to your community, much like I believe it was 161 cities applied to try to lure the USDA, we won. I would like to think it's because awesome. Of the momentum we're in America's heartland, we're in the breadbasket. And then most importantly, we did, and this is, I give a ton of credit to Kim Cowden and the KCADC.
Yeah.
We approached an attraction project like we should in Kansas City, which we pulled 4 senators together, both congressional delegations and our entire bi-state community. And we showed exactly why the Kansas City Metro is the best place for educated professionals to live and work. And once we wanted that, now we go through the process of where do they end up? What office do they live? You know, what submarket do they operate in? And that's the fun part because it's already coming to Kansas City.
Yeah. And, USDA. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I get why people probably are upset because, you know, you're going to have to move.
Oh, I have
potentially
a ton of,
we probably could easily move to DC, me and you,
but absolutely. Well, and I have a ton of empathy for those people, the professionals. And that's why there's actually a delegation in DC right now from Kansas City talking to them and listening and hearing their concerns and trying
once
to do
get
the
here,
Kansas
once
City
they
way,
get here,
right?
They'll be fine, right? That's what always happens, John.
I think so. And these are people that, you know, there are a lot of them that are PhD, like world-class researchers. They have trailing spouses that are professors and lawyers and doctors. So these are people that are really vested in their community, and disrupting that is always going to be tough. But I'm the optimist. Everyone I've ever known, almost everyone I've ever known that's moved to Kansas City from almost anywhere ends up totally falling in love with it. I do think we have a world-class community that really welcomes people with open arms, and I think we'll do the same for USDA.
People don't understand this, but we have a lot of government positions here, correct,
in Kansas City? The federal government is the number one employer
in Kansas City. That's
amazing. It's like 13,000 people in Kansas City work for the federal government.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Amazing. I don't think
big government center.
I didn't know that. And I don't think many people did. So you mentioned locations.
Yeah.
So they're going to figure all that out, right? Missouri, Kansas.
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't have a border war issue with incentives or any of that.
That's pretty much all settled. Now it's really down to, not to geek out, but the GSA, General Services Administration, they come in, they kind of take all comers, people, all the different people who have office buildings. And just so the listeners know, this isn't new buildings. The USDA wants an existing Class A office building because they want to start moving people. The first leading edge of employees will come in July. And then they want the majority of them
soon.
To move in October. So they want an existing building that then would be renovated for their purposes. So
we don't have much Class A office in Kansas City.
Have much Class A. We struggle with that, but
we'll have more soon.
We will have more soon, hopefully. And we're, you know, I do think we have some great buildings downtown that can accommodate this size of employment. And I do hope, this is the selfish side of density. I do tend to think that downtown on the transit corridors, that is going to be a much more palatable place for people relocating from Washington, D.C. to potentially live and work downtown.
Hopefully that happens. One thing I did want to mention that I didn't have in our prep notes that I've actually really kind of taken a liking to. I was in Mount Rushmore up in South Dakota, the Badlands. And I'm thinking to myself, what is something we can do in Kansas City to get like tons of tourists every year?
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about the downtown park idea over the highway. That has been talked about for a while. Dallas did it. Other cities have done it. I'm just trying to think of, hopefully that stuff continues to be talked about. You mentioned the North Loop, or people have mentioned kind of changing the highway system, putting downtown parks, connecting things. You talk about connecting the East Crossroads to 18th and Vine, other places. I mean, is that stuff still happening, or are those conversations still happening? I know that most of the mayoral race was focused on neighborhoods and east side and potholes and all this stuff. These are the type of things that hopefully will continue to be talked about.
Right. And, you know, and I know the mayor-elect and all the candidates understand that you can't be a one-issue leader. So we can fill potholes, we can repair neighborhoods, and we can focus on our downtown. And in fact, downtown is a neighborhood, and it is probably the one neighborhood that if it thrives, it resonates and echoes success out to all the other neighborhoods, because we become a thriving downtown office workforce that employs the people that live in these neighborhoods. That being said, the North Loop, South Loop, both of them are active conversations. 11 years ago, I worked played a role in the concepting and ideas on the South Loop decking of turning it into
11
a linear
years
park.
Ago.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We didn't even have President Obama yet.
I know, and I'm going to give you an amazing fact that it may be one of the only infrastructure projects that has actually gotten cheaper in the 11 years since it was first proposed, because of new technology, new methods of decking it, how the drainage would work, like all of the engineering side that's way beyond my technical acumen, but how that would work. I do think that a public-private partnership for that, with the convention hotel, with one light, two light, three light, with the Crossroads north side ready for more development, those are the type of things. And now we have models too. Dallas just did a decked park between their museums that has been hugely successful. A large chunk of that was privately financed.
Okay, it was. Interesting.
Yeah.
I've seen the numbers originally, or a couple years ago, it was like $140 million to do something like that. Now it's becoming cheaper. So
I think it could be significantly less.
I love it. John Stevens is with us. John, let's talk about Missouri. Yeah. Low-income tax credits went away during this last session, I understand. Talk about those and why those are important, because those are always bandied about every year.
Well, I will use a great series of interviews that Lynn Horsley recently did with I believe five mayors, including Sly, and then
I saw that. That
and,
was cool.
And Congressman Cleaver actually made a great comment that I thought resonated with me. It is, the affordable housing issue in Kansas City must involve the federal government if we are to be successful. That translates also, I would add, a quote, you know, add an addition to that and say it also involves state government, mm-hmm. because low-income housing tax credits, I think they were unduly maligned in the state legislature. They are valuable, valuable tools to close the financing gap to build multi-unit tenant, you know, rental units that are much more affordable for the working class, for upwardly mobile young professionals, and for really, I would say, general citizens throughout our community that need a different priced, less than market rate, but in an area that is still connected to the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. And I do hope Governor Parson, I think Governor Parson had a generally a good positive legislative session. He's been very good to work with in my experience from a development, jobs, and economy level. He gets it. I was disappointed the legislature wasn't able to take that issue up. And I was also a little bit disappointed. I know there had been rumblings that the governor may do an executive action on restoring those. And I understand why his administration didn't want to take an executive action and sort of subvert the legislature. But I do think without LIHTC, Kansas City is going to continue to have challenges in how we build more affordable housing.
I think that's interesting. You mentioned how important the state is to success of Kansas City, not just the federal level. And for many years, St. Louis got all the dough and all the things out of Jeff City. Even when I was there, the rural and the St. Louis folks demanded a lot. But now Kansas City, I feel like, is moving forward. And so that's interesting. So you think Governor Parsons did a pretty good job? I've heard rumors that Nicole Galloway is going to run against him in 2020 if she gets through a primary.
You know, like anybody, I mean, I focus on my role at Port KC. I don't dabble or engage in politics. However, I'm a citizen.
But you watch them.
I'm a citizen. I listen. I think through it. I'm conscious of it. I think all indications are that Nicole Galloway is going to run.
Because she's the auditor now, and she would not have to relinquish her seat. It's a crossover deal, so she stays in her office. Mm-hmm. So many people ask me when the mayor's race was going on, and they're like, why can't Quentin Lucas or Joey Justice keep their seat? You know, because they had a term left.
Yeah.
And I tried to explain it to them. I think a lot of people were frustrated that one of those two people, win or lose, was going to be off the city council.
Right.
And so, you know, this is the way it works, but that's why people like Nicole Galloway can run for governor. Really has, I mean, a little bit maybe to lose politically if she loses, but doesn't lose her day job.
She doesn't lose that position.
It makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. No, I would say,
Josh Hawley did the same thing when he ran for the Senate.
Yeah, yep. Josh Hawley did the same thing. He would have had a seat to go back to.
Yeah.
I do think Governor Parson has done a nice job. He managed a growing conservative caucus that I think really countered a lot of even the Republican agenda in the legislature this last session. Mm-hmm. And he did, I think, a very good job managing and moving a lot of real positive agendas forward. I love the message he brought out about it's not just about bachelor's degrees. We need to provide quality, affordable training and education for professionals, for trades. I think those are incredibly valuable for the future of Missouri. Mm-hmm. And he did a masterful job in managing that. And he ended the session with, I think, a controversial topic, you know, obviously, with that issue that got all the headlines.
Yeah.
But leading up to that, I think the legislature and the governor, they ran a really, you know, and you're a former legislator, but
he was in the
I think
house
they did a great job managing.
Mike Parson was in the house with me. We were on committees together. Good guy.
Yeah.
But you're right. The abortion thing kind of took over. It's kind of like Sly with the pre-K. It's like people remember that last thing, but they don't remember everything before.
They don't remember all the rest. And I think people after the previous governor's situations, people wanted stability, mm-hmm. and they wanted lack of controversy.
John Stevens is with us, Port KC. We're going to be right back after the break talking federal issues. Shoulders up, pull it up, let's work. Throw some perm on your attitude. Girl, you gotta relax. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, our final segment today. You're listening to 980 AM, or if you're joining on iTunes via podcast, we greatly appreciate it. You can check out our website at grillnationshow.com. I'm joined today by Grill Nation Show supporter, Port KC, and John Stevens, who's the president and CEO. Their website is portkc.com. Amazing things happening on the Kansas City, Missouri riverfront down there. Check it out. And they also do all kinds of other stuff in the region as well. A lot of great information at portkc.com. John, we're going to talk about some federal issues here. We mentioned a lot about Missouri in the last segment. Mm-hmm. What candidate you think for the Democrats would play the best in Missouri? I know it's early, but there's a lot of things happening. We're having a big Democratic debate this week.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting when the candidates started entering the fold. I was like, wow, we're gonna have an entire starting soccer, you know, lineup in there. And now we have the starting soccer and all the backups.
24 people,
we have
right?
A big crowd.
It's crazy.
There is still so far to go. I couldn't even begin to say who's going to resonate. I would say, given historically with voters in Missouri, it seems like Biden would be sort of the natural one to resonate. But as we've seen over the last few years, some of those natural assumptions have definitely broken apart. So
yeah,
maybe not.
I agree with you. I think Pete Buttigieg could be good too, mm-hmm. For Missouri. I thought about this after the mayor's race because it seems to me like the status quo candidates, just the safe picks, don't win anymore.
Yeah.
We can look at Mitt Romney. We can look at John McCain. We can look at Hillary Clinton. We can look at Al Gore back in the day, coming off of a great Clinton years. We can look at a lot of different things. So that's what kind of Biden is kind of just the presumptive candidate, right?
Yeah. Well,
that's why people are having some heartburn about it.
You know, I think that's why people are having heartburn. I also think that that's his biggest detriment. You know, he is the traditionalist candidate in many ways. And I think we found that nobody wants the heir apparent, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. People react negatively to that. And whether it's right or wrong, that's sort of just where the nature of politics are right now at the federal level and in many instances, state and local.
Yeah, they're having a debate in Miami. I think there's going to be two of them.
I
think
it's
fascinating to see how they're lining up 11 people on the stage for two nights and the policy that goes into it. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, when this type of thing happens, I know that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, kind of has her own debate stage, essentially, as far as one of the front runners.
Yeah.
Bernie and Biden, I think, are on the same one. It's like two different nights. It's crazy.
Yeah.
How they're going to do this with TV. There's five moderators.
It's an incredibly complex thing, but I think ultimately what will happen, and I have to give journalists and the debate planners credit for trying to create a process that these candidates have a chance to get their message across in an honest and reasonable way. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, I think it's going to be whatever the most inflammatory or most difficult, interesting, quirky sound bites. Those are unfortunately what is going to resonate. And until the campaign contributions and sort of things start really coming in to narrow that field, it's going to be very difficult for him to stand
out. They'll get narrowed probably after Iowa.
I think after Iowa is when you'll start seeing a lot.
If you don't finish in the top three, probably your chances are.
Yeah, and you'll probably still have a few laggards to kind of stick it out, you know, thinking that they're going to find something when they move to the Carolinas or somewhere else. But it's going to be very difficult.
It's crazy that it's already that time of the year.
I mean,
I feel like 2016 wasn't that long ago.
Exactly. We're all still catching our breath from that process. And keep in mind how tough that Republican process was. There were so many candidates in that race, and
we've had another touchdown of them. I think there were 17 total in that one.
Exactly.
Now we're at 24.
Yeah.
I think it's been interesting. I hope that they just don't attack Biden. He's getting attacked from every angle right now, and you know, hopefully they talk about policy and what they're going to do. I think Pete Buttigieg does that really well as far as articulating things that he wants to do and having kind of that aspirational kind of message, kind of like Quinton did, you know, as far as speaking to the masses and really kind of sharing that. And I think that'll help him.
Yeah. And I think
Kamala Harris, is it? I keep pronouncing it wrong.
I know. I think it's Kamala. But I would say
she's also up there. Elizabeth Warren's up there. Bernie Sanders. Then we have all these Cory Bookers of the world, and Klobuchers, and
exactly.
It's gonna be interesting.
And nobody needs my advice, obviously, on this, but I would say the same approach to messaging. I would advise them to take the same approach to messaging that I and others do in civic leadership and in CEO roles, which is honesty, be thoughtful, be clear, be concise, be direct, and engage in a human way, and be willing to answer the issues that matter, and don't try to dodge them or avoid them or counter them. I think, you know, immigration is going to be one that the Democrats are going to have to show leadership.
So that's
leadership
interesting
on.
You mentioned that, because a Gallup poll that came out recently said it was the number one issue. for Americans.
Well,
it's been, trending that way.
It has been made an issue. I don't want to say it's a manufactured issue, but it has been made a much bigger issue than it probably is.
Yeah.
I think trade has been rolled into that with the tariffs. Like, all of these issues kind of muddle, but what is rising to the top is people say, well, immigration is terrifying, and or immigration is something we need to address and fix. And I think a clear, concise message that lays out that we are a nation of immigrants, but that we also have borders, those sort of messages are going to resonate, and people want solutions. And I think
they need
we're
to
ready
come together.
For a solution.
Yeah, yeah, they need to come together and figure something out. Senator Josh Hawley got filed a bill this week with Mark Warner on technology and data and people figuring out how much their data's worth. I thought that was interesting. It's kind of like he's kind of appealing now to the kind of the populace too. Yeah. And it's interesting to talk about that.
You know, I find it interesting. I don't know enough. I'm still a little uncertain of what this bill accomplishes exactly and what it means. I know it's supposed to set valuation and prices for various actions on your own personal data and your ownership of that data. But I'm not really sure where that lands as far as what it accomplishes to the average citizen, because I think
you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
You're not getting check every year.
if I got a check for all the data I used on Twitter, I would be a millionaire and I would love this.
To pay for everything.
Exactly.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I do kind of like that Hawley is working with Mark Warner on this.
I think that's exciting. I think the other one that has been fascinating is Ted Cruz and Ocasio-Cortez kind of having a little love fest, a policy love fest. I think there's been two different issues on what is it, college debt and something else, where Senator Cruz said, well, I actually would co-sponsor a bill with you on this. And it was kind of mind-blowing. Yeah. That people who I think are perceived and probably in many, many realities are total opposite spectrums of the elected office are sort of meeting somewhere in the middle. And I honestly think as interesting and maybe strange as that is, I hold some hope out that this might be sort of our new normal.
I hope so, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully that's a sign of things to come. John, we got about a minute left in the show. Anything else going on with you in this world with poor KC, with summer trips, I'm hoping you're not going to the Dominican Republic anytime soon.
No.
To Punta Canta.
I am really hoping, no, I'm very nervous about the Dominican Republic, and I keep wondering when these toxicology reports are going to come out, because it started as maybe just some odd occurrence, and now it seems like a trend that is a little unnerving, scary, I think, for people when you're starting to hear these weekly reports now of deaths and illnesses in these resorts. Obviously not enough to stop traveling to beaches, but it definitely is something that we need to know more about, and hopefully people are addressing.
Are there any exciting events coming up on the riverfront, Berkeley Riverfront Park?
Go to portkc.com and check them out. We just came off of an amazing Pride Fest, largest Pride Fest in the history of Kansas City down on the riverfront, an amazing three-day event of inclusion and celebration of Kansas City. And we have dozens of events. There's beach volleyball, there's yoga in the park, there's all kinds of things. And we're excited about that. And then be paying attention. You'll see some of the great projects that we have hopefully coming to fruition soon.
John Stevens, Port KC, thanks for coming on the Grill Nation show and for your support. Great show.
Thanks, Jason. Always glad to be here.
Thanks for listening to Grill Nation. We'll see you again next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.